Now, your host, Michael Cohen, with the Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
And we're back, 6:46 on a freezing Thursday night in Lansing. I'm Michael Cohen. Welcome back to the program. When you think of the Civil War, you may not think of immigrants and soldiers from Michigan, but about 90,000 Michigan men left their homes, farms, businesses, and loved ones to join a war that took the lives of almost 360,000 Americans. Among them was the great-great-grandfather of Larry B. Bramble, who had recently immigrated to America. Larry joins me now to talk about his story, which he writes about in his compelling new book titled For Liberty. Larry, welcome to the program.
Pleased to be here. Thank you.
So tell me about your great-great-grandfather, Philip Lender King, and his brothers. Their story is probably similar to many other men at that time of coming to America only to be thrust into the Civil War. What led him to immigrate to the U.S.?
Over in Germany, where they were primarily living, their mother and father had passed away. Their father was engaged in battles with Napoleon and the like. So it was not a very pleasant place to live at the time. And they were looking for a place where they could call home, that they could have more liberties and freedom and be able to have a better life. When they got here, it was prior to the Civil War. They had three brothers that initially went up to Michigan, and then several others ended up down at Baltimore, Maryland.
So did new immigrants have any clear understanding of what this war was even about?
Well, I believe they learned very quickly. I know Philip, my great-great-grandfather, who was down in Baltimore, was in a situation where he was able to see what was going on at the times. I mean, there were it was a very divided state, and the family would write back and forth so that they were able to keep in touch. The country was pretty much aware of, you know, all the hostilities that were going on because of the idea of slavery and the abolitionists and everything that were going on. So, yeah, they had a pretty good idea of what was at stake.
You also closely studied the involvement of Michigan military units in the war. How
Yes.
involved were Michigan's regiments on the battlefield?
They were very engaged at times. My great-great-uncle Rudolph was actually one of the first ones to join up into the 2nd Michigan. And initially, they, as soon as they were able to, got down to Washington to protect it. But they were actually, they weren't directly in the first Battle of Bull Run or First Manassas, but they had approached Blackburn's Ford the day before, which is along the same river. And they got into a pretty good skirmish there, which showed that the Confederates were more in force than they realized. And that's why that battle actually took place a little bit farther north. And then during the battle, they actually had to recover the retreat of the Union forces to keep Confederates from coming up and cutting them off from Washington.
And in terms of the structure of the battles, how long did they tend to last? How were they typically ended? And did someone simply surrender or find a way to retreat?
Yeah, well, battles, sometimes they would just call them a skirmish if it was a small battle. They could last anywhere from a few minutes to hours to days on end. You figure the one battle of Fort Sanders that the 2nd Michigan and the 27th Michigan were in Tennessee just took place in the morning, whereas you would have long skirmishes where just prior to the Battle of Knoxville or Fort Sanders, the 2nd Michigan and the 27th Michigan were with Burnside's army, and they had gone down the river and they were actually kind of skirmishing all the way back, holding Longstreet back, giving the troops and engineers at Knoxville a chance to build the fortifications. So sometimes a battle would be kind of like a long string of little battles, and sometimes it would just be major battles where there was a fort or some kind of fortifications, and they actually had to put a siege on, which sometimes sieges could even last months.
I'm talking to Larry Bramble about his new book about the Civil War and about his ancestors' experience in it, titled For Liberty. Now, what about becoming a prisoner? How poorly were Civil War prisoners treated, and did many of them spend years as prisoners, or were exchanges fairly regular?
Well, at the beginning of the war, it was not uncommon for a prisoner of war to be exchanged fairly quickly. My one great-great-grandfather was actually captured at Second Winchester, and he only spent a little over 1 month in captivity. He was marched down into Virginia, where he had a he was on an island out in the middle of the river, and you know, they didn't have the best food. They didn't have sufficient tents or anything like that. The weather was very cold, so they didn't have a lot of shelter or anything like that. But the short exchange rate at that point, which was kind of a funny thing, because a regular soldier could be exchanged one for one, but if you captured a general or something, you could get, you know, maybe a few hundred prisoners or something for a general or something like that. But it ended up breaking down by the end of the war when the black troops started coming in to the fighting more readily with the Union. The Confederacy did not want to parole, as they call it, or release the black prisoners or the officers that led them into battle. So consequently, that led to the breakdown of the exchange system, which unfortunately, with some of the horrible situations in the camps, many prisoners started dying of starvation, different diseases, dysentery and the like, and it was a very miserable way to go.
What about wounds? Was this a time then when a minor wound could very well lead to infection and death? And was that a way that many soldiers, in fact, did die?
Well, you figure back then they didn't have the means for medicine the way they have today. If somebody was wounded in the arm or leg, amputation was pretty much the way they solved the problem, especially if the bone was shattered. Rudolph was actually wounded at the Battle of Fort Sanders in Knoxville. A bullet had hit the upper part of his bone in his hip, and they actually had to amputate the upper third of his hip. Of course, the infection and everything set in, and he ended up dying a few days later. But the battlefield places, the places where the doctors worked, there was blood everywhere. There were piles of legs and arms and things. It was something that it was more like a horror movie that you would see today.
The war lasted from 1861 to 1865. Although, at what point was it clear the Union was going to win?
Well, it was actually not until later on in the war. One of the first really turning points was the Battle of the Wilderness. That was when the Union forces finally got somebody in there who was not going to be timid and was going to, you know, take the fight to the enemy, as they say, and they just weren't going to retreat. Usually, up till then, they would go into a battle, they'd take some licks, and then retreat back, you know, recover, come back in. But from that point on, starting about the time of the wilderness, they just kept pushing, and it finally just crushed the South. They were starting to get depleted in all their food and medicine and everything, ammunition. So the pressure just was too much to bear at that point.
Only a minute left. What happened to your great-great-grandfather and his brothers after the war, and did many of the veterans of the war manage to get back to a normal life?
Well, those that survived lived the best life they could. Now, I had two that received no wounds at all, which obviously it was easier for them to continue on with their life than those that had received crippling wounds. The one had, that was Frederick. He was wounded in the left hand. He had to change his job from a sattler to working on the docks at one point. And then he couldn't, you know, do all the jobs he used to do because it took a lot of fine details and stuff. The one who was my great-great-grandfather, Philip, was wounded in the head at Antietam. He ended up suffering a lot of different medical problems down the road that today would have been easily diagnosed, but back then they didn't have MRIs and CAT scans and the like, so they just kind of let him go and said, well, we don't see anything wrong with you. So it was difficult.
Well, certainly a war that that no one's forgotten, and you know, a huge part of our American history. Larry Bramble, check out his new book titled For Liberty, all about the Civil War, the experience of his ancestors. Larry, where can your book be found?
It can be found on Lulu.com, also through Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining me.
Okay. Thank you for having me.